On Radio 4, Joe Merston's funeral wake continues. The Merstons grow more drunk and more dangerous. And Stuart discovers the truth about who took the incriminating photos of Jell and him in tonight's episode of Stonemouth.
Loving you isn't the right thing to do. How can I ever change things that I feel?
Stuart, Angelica said. I'm back at the buffet tables, looking at the puddings and trying to decide if I'm remotely hungry or just being greedy. We're going, she tells me, putting one hand on my forearm. But there's a few people been invited back to the house later. Feel free, okay? She dives in with a small cheek kiss, turns and goes. I'm at the bar, getting a pint for myself, plus one for Ferg and a large whiskey too. Stuart, Ellie says, slipping in beside me at the bar. We wind our way through the press round the bar, heading for Ferg, back in prime position in the centre of the giant bay window. I hand him his pint. Ellie presents his whiskey.
Thank you, Stuart. And Ellie.
And how are you, Ferg? Ellie asks.
Oh, radiant.
There's some very so-whatish chat for a couple of minutes. Then Ellie says she'd better be going. A mum to drop at the house. You'll be here later, she says as she passes. Yup. There's something I want to do before I get too pissed and before Ellie gets back. I go up to the fourth floor, prepared to be as brazen as you like regarding the dispensation of nods, hellos and so on, but there's nobody to be seen. So I stand there, looking up at the top of the middle cubicle's door and holding the phone up and out and then closer to and further in, trying to get everything aligned. There's no problem with the photos taken from under the sinks, from beneath the curtain. Any kid could have taken them. So could any adult prepared to stoop so low. It's this one. The one featuring the pair of red satin gloves hoisted ecstatically, if I may make so immodest, above the cubicle door that poses credibility problems. Nothing fits until I'm standing upright. The image, and by implication, the camera that took it, at about adult head height. I try to get a word with Greer, but at the same time, I don't want to just rock up to the Merston table, not with the surly brothers using it as their base for expeditions to the bar and with the disapproving relations in attendance. The third time, in the corridor just outside the function room, Greer looks like she's going to walk right past me again, ignoring me, even after a perfectly audible, Greer! I step in front of her. She almost collides with me. She frowns, makes to go past. Stew, do you mind? I block her again. Greer!
What do you think you're doing, Gilmore?
Shit. It's Fraser, her brother. Right behind me. Hand on my shoulder.
This arsehole giving you grief?
Don't, Greer says. I can look after myself.
No. It'd be a pleasure.
Greer takes his arm, starts to pull him away. Let's get back to the table.
What if I don't want to?
Come on, Fraser, see me back, she says. Slightly shaken, I return to the room. I sit down and say hi to a whole table of people I vaguely recall from school. One of the girls, the cute one with short black hair, is trying to tell me about something that wasn't her fault, but all I can think about is Fraser's threatening behaviour. I head for the bar. All the local worthies, all the important people in town, are either still here or on their way out or not long departed. Oh, just look at you all. Self-satisfied, but still desperate to get on, do better, compete, make more. And it's okay, because this is the way everybody is. This is what everyone does. So there's nothing to be gained by being any different.
Was it like being returned to the scene of the crime, eh?
A slightly slurred voice asks. I turn towards the voice, and it's Donald Merston, Ellie's dad.
Mr. M, I say, nodding to him.
He swings an arm, sort of slaps me medium weight on the upper arm in what is probably meant to be a bluff, manly sort of way.
Nah, it's all right. Just thought it might be funny for you, being back here after that night, you know.
Well, it is, I admit.
Good job we didn't catch you that night, eh?
Ellie returned, wears smart but casual black jeans, lilac blouse and dark jacket. She walks straight up to us. Dad, Stuart, you two okay? She asks, looking and sounding tense.
Fine, bro, good, aye,
Dawn says. You're not running Stuart out of town again, are you, Dad?
No, well, he's off tomorrow, that right, aye?
Aye, I say, back down the road tomorrow.
And anyway,
Dawn says, still looking at me,
we weren't trying to run him out of town the last time.
I think his eyes narrow a wee bit.
We were trying, Donald says slowly, to get our hands on him.
I told Donald I'd apologise to you, I tell Ellie. My mouth is getting dry. Yes, Ellie looks from me to her dad, and he did.
Ah, well, but that doesn't make everything all right, does it?
Stuart tells me he still has feelings for me. Ellie's gaze swivels in my direction while Dawn just stares at my nose. Isn't that right, Stuart? I take a moment before answering. Yes, that's what I said. It's true. I also said I didn't expect anything.
Oh, aye, that's funny. I still have feelings for Stuart too. I'll bet the boys still have feelings as well.
Ellie takes her dad's upper arm in one hand and mine in the other, holding us like a ref before a boxing match. Dawn glares at me. Will you both just stop? Ellie says gently. She squeezes my arm a little, probably his too. This is about me, hello? And I'm still thinking, and we'll talk about this sensibly, I hope, when I've decided how I feel. That okay, Dad? Dawn looks thoughtful.
Maybe,
he concedes. Stuart? Wish I knew what this was meant to accomplish, I confess. Clearing the air, Ellie says to both me and Dawn. She looks at me. Okay? Okay, I say. She looks back at Dawn. Okay?
Aye, okay.
Ellie and I walk out of the hotel and down into the gardens. Ellie gives a small laugh, nods to one side and says, I had my own little micro-fling here, an hour or two before you and Angelica got jiggy. I look at her, eyebrows raised. Dean Watts, remember him? Yep. Ellie nods. I sort of let him kiss me, just back there. I know. I saw, I tell her. You saw me and Dean? Yeah. I wasn't following you, just coincidence, but yes. Hmm. You never said. We resume our descent of the stone stairs. Greer told Jell that you'd always wanted to get off with her. With Jell, I mean, Ellie says. We keep on walking. Did she now? Jell let it slip once. We had a drunken night of blame, recrimination, apologies, forgiveness, and some wine-fueled tears and hugs a couple of years back. She sighs, rubs her hands together, palms flat as she leans on the wall. I'm not sure what I feel about you, she tells me. It's not that I have to search for feelings about you, that they're so minor or hidden I need to look hard to find them. It's more that I have really intrusive feelings about you. But they're contradictory, they clash, and I can't work out the balance of them. Not yet. So part of you still hates me. Hate might be too strong. I take a deep breath. Look, I think part of me just wants to know you don't hate me. Part of me just wants your forgiveness so I can feel I'm not that bad a person after all, and then I bugger off back out your life again so I can get on with my own life. What do you want of me, Stuart? She asks softly. What is it you want to ask me? Or tell me? I take a deep breath and let it out. I'll always love you, Ellie. Even if we never see each other again and I find somebody else and I fall completely in love with her and she becomes the love of my life and we have kids and live happily together for the next 60 years, I'll still always love you. But I can't offer you any more than I did before. And I let you down then. She smiles. I've stopped hating you. And I never entirely stopped loving you, even though I probably should have. She shrugs. I'll always be part of this family, Stuart.
I know.
There's a pause. Then she says, the thing about Callum? What? he might have been pushed, and he might have deserved it. I think about this. Uh-huh. Okay. So who did the pushing? The boys. Dawn, possibly. First thing I thought when I heard Callum was dead was that Greer had actioned her plan about accusing him, or threatening to accuse him, of raping her that night in his bed when she was still a kid. As it turns out, Callum might have been in talks with one of the businesses from Glasgow, the same people who tried expanding into Stonemouth a few years ago and were sent homeward to think again. But I could be wrong. It could all be wrong. She flexes, using her backside to push herself away from the wall. Come on. Well past time I had a proper drink. I push away too. Amen to that. Ellie and I walk back into the half-emptied room where people are still talking, milling, eating and drinking, but the table where the cute girl was sitting has been abandoned, and I can't see her or her friends anywhere. I leave Ellie talking to an old academy pal and tell her I won't be long. Stonemouth, being the size it is, it takes all of 5 minutes of just asking around to find out who the people at the table were and who the cute girl with the black hair is. I even get her phone number. I take another walk outside. Tasha?
Yeah?
Stuart Gilmore. We were talking earlier.
Oh, yeah. Hello again.
Tasha, I take it you were one of the kids who had the digital cameras at Lauren McLaughlin and Drew Linton's wedding. Would that be right?
Well, yeah.
You were saying something about how it wasn't your fault. It wasn't your fair hands that took those photos, you know?
Yeah, that.
You said somebody put you up to it. That was Greer, wasn't it? You gave the camera to Greer, is that right?
Gotta go now, bye.
Uh-huh, I say quietly to an unresponsive phone. I rejoin Ellie at the bar. She appears to have Ferg in tow, which is just as well as he's listing. Gilmore, he says, eyes widening when he sees me. You'll do. This demented harridan refuses to escort me off the premises for the purposes of smoking. Ferg's practically asleep when we arrive at Mike Mack's place. Jell greets us, all happy, smiling, pleased to see us. A while later, I'm feeling a little dozy here in the humid, sunny warmth of the pool area. Ellie is doing double lengths underwater now, hyperventilating at the shallow end of the pool and then slipping under the surface. Jell comes and sits down on the lounger next to me, holding a glass of something pale and bubbly. "And how are you and Ellie?" she asks. I shake my head. "Not entirely sure." She taps my forearm twice as she rises. "Best of luck." She goes off to talk to Felpie and a couple of the others. I look after her for a moment, then turn back to watch Ellie. She's back under the water again, flowing along just above the glistening surface of the tiles on the pool bottom, like something more liquid than the water itself.
Stonemouth was read by David Tennant. It was a Heavy Entertainment production for BBC Radio 4.